I'm Jim Park, and you're tuned to Broken Road Radio. It is a Transcendent Tuesday. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. Well, he's not from. He's from Louisiana. Is that how you say it? How do you pronounce? Well, you're
Louisiana? Louisiana?
Just, you I'm say, from you New say Orleans. Louisiana. Nolens, okay.
Yeah. Not New Orleans.
That's true. New Orleans. Dave Dattelpunt is with us, too. He's up there in East Dakota, and the three of us are going to take a look at the wilderness today. And it's an article from the Cornwall Alliance, and it basically refutes a lot of the claims by, say, the Interior Department that there's not enough room for the animals here. We've got to save more. We've got to set more aside. We've got to turn over more land to the federal government. And I'm thinking all they have to do is come and drive across West Texas, and they'll change their minds instantly.
Well, they just have to drive across the West. I mean, it's just not West Texas. I mean, have you been to Montana lately? It's interesting because Biden administration is, of course, proposing this conserve 30% of the nation's land, making it basically we can't live there. This is going to be preserved for something.
He's even got a nickname for it, 30 by 30. That's 30% of the nation to be under the federal auspices by the year 2030. 30 by 30. That reminds me of a deer rifle somehow. That's probably accidental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 30 out 30. There mm-hmm. you go. Yep. So this is just more more legislation, more, well, of course, you know, our lawmakers aren't voting on this. This is just a proposal, and he'll probably, you know, put it in an executive.
Oh, why not?
And anybody else together and clear more land, or at least have set land aside and shoo people who the minimum population that lives out in this in the wilderness to you have to leave by such and such a date. And the interesting fact about all of this is that we have 30% of our land is already controlled by the government mm-hmm. in one form or another. 20% of the nation is under the federal government. And then the rest is under the state-held, state parks and things like that. So we're at the 30% level, so I'm not sure, you know, why they want more. Well, I do have a hint as to why they want more. And unfortunately, this is all, you know, political. Anything coming out of the Biden administration tends to be...
Well, it comes up from beyond the Biden political administration. There was this UN conference on climate change back in November. And that's when a lot of this information surfaced from basically, I guess, representatives from the U.S. who were speaking at any number of side events to this whole conference, talking about the extinction of species and how awful that is and how fast it's accelerating and surely their habitat's disappearing. And we've got to save them. By golly, we've got to save them.
We've got to save the animals and the darter snail and all of these other, you know, creatures. Now, it's interesting that this conference that was 18,000 participants
18,
were at was chaired by a Chinese chairman. So China is the worst offender in all of the ecological and, situations. And so they pay no attention to any of these policies and just do what they are going to do. And if they need more land, they just take it and start developing it. And they don't mind chewing up other people's land for mining purposes, as we've talked about before, to get the lithium and other metals out for making, you know, the batteries that we so desperately need for our electric vehicles. So we can become, you know, dependent on China for everything. So it's interesting that they chaired this conference. And the other thing, of course, is, you know, the Heritage Foundation has already said that, hey, look, you know, most of the land in the U.S. is, not most of the land, 30% of the land is basically under federal or state control. And then the rest of it is pretty much, you know, under farmland in such, and or forest in scrubs and grasslands and wetlands and other things. So you have very little land that is left for development, and the land that currently we have under development in the 48 continuous states, at least, is 5.3% of the land is under development. So where are all the people, and where is all of the destruction of the animals? Yes, back in the 1900s, there were those that were pretty much, you know, they were shooting the deer and the antelope, and they almost went to extinction. But since then, all of those species, of which there are many, have come back strong, and now we don't have a shortage of any of them. So our conservation policies have not only taken into effect, but have been quite effective in preserving these species that they talked about at this conference, or at least the United States doesn't need to participate in this because we have the regulations already in our books.
Yeah, but what else would Al Gore have to do?
Well, exactly. I mean, he could write more books, of course.
Well, he was there.
It was
largely for climate change that motivated a lot of this, and I'm not sure how much. How do the animals do now? I've just been reading about. This is the other article you sent us here. The macaques, the monkeys, who have adapted by living downtown. I mean. doing what it takes to survive.
In Thailand. We'll transition to that one in just a moment. But what is all of this? This push to get more government control of land. What is the major push behind that? Is it really to save the animals? Is it really to make our land pristine again? Because, like I said, China's not doing it, and will probably never do it. And they're the greatest polluters on the face of the earth, and yet, we don't do anything about them. And so what is all of this about? And is it about pushing people out of the countryside and into the cities so that they could be controlled easier?
Wow.
You know, it's a lot easier controlling people if they're in the cities, because if you don't do what the government is telling you to do, then we'll just turn off your electricity. We can certainly, prevent you from buying food or whatever it happens to be. And, of course, your digital money can be turned off and on depending on how good of a citizen you are. But if you're living off the land, you don't need money. You just need the land. And
do you remember the hubbub? I think it was in Montana a couple of years ago. The ranchers were up in arms and demonstrating against government controls on grazing areas, putting them out of business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The animals were great. I mean, they had basically a lease from the federal government that. Allowed them to graze on federal lands, and then the government wanted to come in and said, oh, no, you can't graze on these lands anymore. And that created a big problem, because now you got all this livestock, and you can't graze where you used to graze. And so government control of the land, in my opinion, is not necessarily a good thing. I mean, I enjoy the national parks, but how much of our countryside do we really need to have under the government control? Because you stifle all kinds of obviously development, but the development's going to happen around the cities, not necessarily out in the middle of nowhere. So it's Yeah, it's a big problem for the government to say, it should raise a red flag, let's put it this way, for the government to say, we want more land, and we want to control more of the wilderness than we currently do. So, anyway, back to the macaque story. Mm-hmm. So, they're finding that these macaques in Thailand are developing tools. And, of course, we knew that, for a long time, that macaques living on the seashore, for example, on the beach, use stones to crack open the oysters so that they could get the meat on the inside. And, of course, they honed their tools, if you will, so that the shell would break without smashing, the meat on the inside, because once the meat is smashed, it's not as good as, having it nice and whole. And so the macaques, apparently by accident or from some other reason, have developed these tools and the sharper stones to crack the oyster shells. And they use, in other places, they use stones for cracking nuts and for cracking bones. And, of course, the sharper your stone is, the better it is. Well, after observing these macaques with hidden video cameras, they found out that, when they strike the stones together, they produce, if they miss their target, then, one stone will hit another stone, and a shard will fly off the stone and inevitably make the stone sharper. So the question is, did the sharpening of the stone, was that by accident or was that on purpose? Well, clearly the video shows that they accidentally missed, and so the shard flew off, and they produced the sharpest stone from it, and since that was a better tool for whatever they were doing, they took the sharpest stone as opposed to the duller stone. Now, let's bring that, because the whole article is based on is evolution, with evolution in mind. And so these stones that the macaques are making or using are very, very similar to the ancient stones that man used during, in quote, the Stone Age, of course, like arrowheads and the hatchets and all of these, they would, the remains of making the tools look extremely similar to what the macaques are doing and leaving behind after they are making their stones. So the question becomes, did man purposely make these tools, or did they come by this accidentally? And so if you do it by accident and you find it useful, then do you can conclude that, I'm evolving because now I figured out that this is a useful tool and I can use it for multiple purposes, and some of these pieces of stone that have flown off, I can use that as a knife, and I can actually use it as a tool to scoop out oysters, for example, or other things, and even for cutting because of the sharpness of them. And of course, you could think about evolving, and some of these sharper stones we'll use for arrowheads, and we just need to shape them and put them on twigs, and then make arrows with them, and so forth and so on. So, was human evolution by accident, or was it purposeful? And of course, the whole question is is wrong because their premise is wrong from the point of view that, you know, evolution was an accidental type of thing and man just happened to come across it. And for whatever reason, man evolved, but these monkeys did not. And they're still accidentally making, the monkeys are still, the macaques are accidentally making their stones in their tools, while man has, of course, evolved way past that, and we've got computers and supercomputers and artificial intelligence, and pretty soon we'll be able to plug into.
Of course, you know, when you think about it, Don, how many scientific discoveries are made by accident? Something goes wrong, something unexpected happens, it gives you a clue that the process is different than you anticipated, and so you follow another route. That seems to be the whole process of learning, which is built into us, the ability to do that.
Well, exactly. There is an aspect of that, because we know that penicillin, for example, was discovered by accident. You know, they had this mold growing on their petri dish, and lo and behold, there was something else. I mean, the bacteria wasn't growing around it. And so the mold was giving off a substance that was apparently inhibiting it from being eaten by the bacteria, and hence penicillin you know, came out of that. So that was by accident, and a lot of things in science can, not everything, a lot of things are planned, but that's a scientific process. You go out to do an experiment and something else happens, and you say, okay, why did that happen? But that's intelligence, the ability to say, why did that happen, or what's happening here? The macaques don't have that ability. And actually, the macaques, if you take a macaque monkey out in the woods and he's not using stones, he won't use stones. It's only, it's a trained, it's a taught type of behavior, because it's the macaques living on the seashore, for example. They're young, see their mom and dads cracking these stones, and so they imitate what the parents are doing, and they start using stones, and then figuring out that the duller stones are not as good as the sharper stones.
Well, see, I don't know if I'm differing with you or not, but I'm suggesting they have the ability to learn too, and to adapt. That it's built into them, just like it's built into us. You see, the young ones learn from the older ones' actions, and say, "Oh, that's what I'm supposed to do." So they make a deduction, don't they? They deduce.
Well, that's a good question. Are they deducing it, or are they saying this works and I can eat faster, and where this other method doesn't?
Well, that's the same thing. It's the application of logic of some kind.
But they're not evolving past that.
Oh, I would not call that evolution. Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're not going to the next level and saying, well, maybe I can sharpen metal and make a better tool with metal than stones, which keeps breaking on me. And so they're not going beyond that, whereas humans have gone beyond that. And it's the old story, did we evolve or are we devolving? We're not, you know. Because Adam was very smart, and we've talked about this before, but Adam was very smart, and he was so smart, matter of fact, he named all the animals in a day. And so you had to remember what you named this particular animal to name a different animal, give a different name to the animal, and then he had to observe the animal's behavior, because the naming had to do with the behavior of the animal.
Of course, Don, there were only 12 animals back then.
12, yeah, no, they were
even a dozen. Yeah.
There were thousands of kinds of animals, of course, that you know, he had to deal with in order for you know, for him to name the animals. But we get off from the main point here. So accidental discovery, absolutely, that is involved in the scientific and you know. Discovery, you know, has a method. We do that all the time. When we went to the moon, for example, We thought that the moon's surface had so much dust on it that we needed big pads on the bottom of the landing craft so it wouldn't sink too deeply into the moon dust. And the reason why we thought that there was a lot of moon dust there was because we mistakenly dated the moon as being ancient instead of young. So instead of having a young Earth and a young universe, we said, well, this is very old, and we know that, you know, the moon, we can obviously see the moon's surface. It's been bombarded with craters, with meteors for a long time, so there should be X, you know, hundreds of feet, or I don't remember exactly how deep they thought the moon dust was. But when they actually got there and found out that, oh, this is only a couple inches deep, they were surprised. So it was a discovery.
I remember that was a big worry, that if Eagle may have landed, it may just sink down to the gunnels in this dust, and it didn't. That was a major revelation just from the get-go.
Yes. So, you know, that was a discovery. That was it an accidental discovery? Well, that wasn't what they anticipated based on the incorrect hypothesis that, the moon was very, very old and had been bombarded all these years. And so, yes, we make those discoveries all the time, but we have the ability to say, oh, this is better than what I was doing. Or we have the ability to say, how can I use this in whatever it is that I'm trying to solve, which is totally different than what the monkeys are doing here. So these folks that are talking about the monkeys, of course, are trying to figure out how man evolved. And so they're pointing to the monkeys and saying, wow, you know, what they're doing looks like an awful lot of things that we saw with our early man. So maybe man wasn't so intelligent after all, and maybe things just came by accident.
Well, you know, I'd like to take a different tact here, and because the connection between monkeys and man is something they like to highlight. Oh, wait, this had to come out of monkey behavior. Well, isn't it possible that some Stone Age guy watched a macaque and said, "Hey, I have an idea. I can all I'm saying is that when God designed his creation, he gave each kind the ability on its own to survive in the environment in which he put them. And that some of those gifts might be similar to others. Certainly he put his image on us, gave us special responsibilities and a highly elevated status, but that's not to say that he didn't have some good ideas that he either borrowed from us and gave to them, or vice versa. But it all says, well, there's a creator.
Exactly. And if you start with that premise, there's a creator, and the creator designed different animals, for example, and plants and things for our education and for our use, then you take a completely different slant on things. And you say, wow, you know, the whale, for example, the whale's fins or flippers, whatever you want to call them, are fluted. And so the being fluted like that has an advantage in streamlining making it less difficult for the whale to swim. Well, you know, water is a fluid, air is a fluid, so the thought is, well, maybe if we flute the ends of our wings, for example, we could fly faster than if the wing was straight, the tail end of not the leeward end of the wing, but the other end of the wing, if you will. If you flute that, then you will be able to achieve greater, you won't have as much wind resistance, for example, as the whales don't have as much water resistance by that. So we can learn from nature, and indeed we would be smart to look at our surroundings and see how things were created in order to use them, you know, to our advantage, because they were, uh, they they were created, and they were created, the whale was created for his environment, and we can learn things from the whale, for example, as opposed to just starting everything from scratch, and we got to discover everything on our own.
You may recall. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
I want to talk to the guy that looked at this large rock-like substance and said, "You know, I think there's something good to eat in there, and I'm going to break it open." And then when he got to it, he actually put it in his mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was called an oyster. And who would put a raw oyster in your mouth?
Yeah, well, I want to talk to you. I'm not sure if I want to do that now.
Well, that's where the word ew comes from, say.
Ew.
That, do you remember there was a public TV series years ago called Connections, which was, I was just a huge fan. And it went from invention to invention to invention and saw how they were linked. From basic discovery to growth and research and then development, and how man was able to do that, unlike the other species. So we certainly have the gift to take that to new heights and go farther and farther with it. I mean, partly because not only do we have opposable thumbs, we have eyes and ears, and we can see around the world, and we can learn from so many different venues and then connect the dots. And
absolutely.
That truly is a gift, truly is a gift. We've been talking with Don Clark. Don's a member of the board of Creation Moments. I forgot to mention that. He's also a biochemist with years of experience in pharmaceuticals. And we respect his opinion and enjoy the time we get to spend with him just about every Tuesday morning. Creation Moments, by the way, is an organization, a ministry that's been around since the 90s. No, older than that, Don, right?
Yes, it's older than that. We're coming up, several years ago, we celebrated the 50th anniversary.
That's right.
We're coming up on the 55th anniversary.
Well, it's a ministry that delights in accumulating and finding and developing and presenting scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. We recommend a visit to their website, creationmoments.com. And Don, thanks again for your time. It was a good one. We'll look forward to next week.
Okay, very good. Y'all have a great week.
You too.
Thanks much, Don.